Coach, defense is important, but a team also has to score to win. You can have the best defense in the world, but without an offense to match, you won't be winning any championships. Just have a look at what happened during March Madness this year. Three out of four teams that made it to the Final Four on both the women's and men's side were the top three offensive-ranked teams. That's no coincidence. The reality is most coaches will win more games with a 15% improvement on offense. But how? We're bringing in one of the greatest offensive minds in the game and Read and React creator, Coach Rick Torbett, to help answer that question. On May 9th, Rick and I will kick off our four-week offensive strategies track where we will teach coaches how to score 7 to 10 more points per game. Just head to pgccoaching.com/tracks to learn more.
Welcome to the Hardwood Hustle powered by PGC Basketball. We believe in the value of a coach. We're here to educate, empower, and encourage you to lead like never before. This week, we're joined by Todd Gongwer, a best-selling author, speaker, and teacher on leadership and cultural development. He wrote one of our favorite books, Lead for God's Sake. And in this episode, they discuss leading well in a competitive environment amidst the pressures of winning. Before we start, a quick word from Manawatsa.
Coach, would you like to have a team full of great shooters next season? We've partnered with our friends at NOAA to bring to you the Hoops app, a free app to help your players measure the trajectory and arc of their shot. They'll get immediate feedback after every make or miss so that they can course correct and become a better shooter faster. Have your players download the Hoops app at thehoopsapp.com/PGC today so that you can have a team full of better shooters next season.
Welcome back to Hardwood Hustle. TJ and Sam here with you. And man, we're excited. We got a special guest, Todd Gongwer. And Todd has made an impact on TJ and I's life. And what's one really cool thing about the Hardwood Hustle, and TJ, you know this, is, you know, we get to see people from afar and gain admiration or respect for somebody. And then we get to meet them in real person. And, you know, Todd, we read your book over 10 years ago, Lead for God's Sake. I feel like it had, you know, God's timing all over it for me, because I just read Joe Erman's Inside Out. Coach, I didn't even plan it. I read that book. I read your book right after in about a 3-week span. And it did have I tell coaches all the time, those two books should be the first two books you read when you first start coaching. And I say that when you're not in the room, but I want to tell you that with you in the room right now. But thanks for joining us. We're excited to have you on here.
Hey, thanks so much, guys, for inviting me on. This is, I love it. I love what you do, and honored to be here for today.
So let's use your book as a jump off point to some of our conversation. And I'm not going to give the book summary, but it's just a great story about the traps of leadership or losing your way in leadership. So, you know, maybe start us off with you've been in basketball coaching, you're in business, you're in leadership. What are some of the most common mistakes that leaders make? Let's start there.
Man, that's a really good one. I would tell you that I think probably more than ever, our natural tendency is, the first and foremost when things are going wrong is to point our fingers outward. And, you know, we're all, you know, naturally, if we're leading a team, if we're coaching, you know, there's a natural tendency to, we're fixers. You know, that's a little bit what we do. And so the tendency is to go outside and go, gosh, these kids, we need to fix these kids. We need to fix the administration. We need to fix, you know, so it's always pointing outward versus, you know, where the majority of the control and most issues that we're dealing with starts with us. And what is it that we can do to make an adjustment? What do I need to look at here first? I think that's probably the biggest one. And I call it kind of the responsibility crisis, where we've got this tendency in society just to blame, instead of, you know, starting here at the plank in our own eye, so to speak. I think that's probably, to me, one of the biggest challenges. And I mean, it was back when I first wrote this thing, I think in terms of my heart, but even today, really learning to start within first.
Yeah. And
you know, reading the book, a couple of things I just loved about it is a lot of the change came from an unlikely source in, you know, in the janitor. And you know, sometimes we're so fast paced and don't have the time or the patience to listen to others. It can add a lot of value to our life and us as leaders. And just curious as to why is it important? You know, you talk about relationships in there, marriages, and if a leader is going to be really strong, why is it important to have that balance in your life?
Yeah, I think, I mean, again, I'll go back to this thing where we call them, it's not a new term, but blind spots. I mean, every single one of us has blind spots in our life. And the reality is, you know, I'm a firm believer that the leaders that can get to the, you know, the very, very best, I guess, among us in terms of leaders are the ones that are able to in some way, shape, or form, recognize the blind spots and minimize the effects of those. In some cases, even turn them around and you know, call it, maybe turn them into a strength of some type. And we just won't find those without seeking out input from others, you know, and those around us. And for me, I mean, I've always relied on, I've been blessed over the years to, you know, have good, starting with my parents, just good mentors in my life that were willing to speak the truth to me. I think so. Finding those individuals out there, and sometimes, like you said, in uncommon places, you know, I think that's it's so important in leadership because we all have blind spots. I think the other thing is you know, as you become a head coach or you become a CEO, the higher up the ladder you go, the natural tendency of many people around you, of those around you, is to kind of tell you what you want to hear versus what you need to hear. And I think that's just a huge, huge, I mean, I deal with that in a lot of what I do today. As I work with high level coaches and business leaders, it is by far the number one challenge is that, you know, people want to get close to you. People want to, you know, help you be a part of whatever it is that you're doing when you're at the top. And very rarely are they willing to go, hey, you know, you're out of bounds here, so to speak. Like you're just flat out missing it, and you're hurting people. You're being selfish, whatever it may be. And I think we all really need, you have to be intentional to find that, especially as a head coach or CEO or somebody in a leadership position. As you move up, you have to be more and more intentional with finding that if you're really going to be able to recognize and keep those blind spots in check, so to speak.
Todd, before we press record, we were telling you about our leadership clinics we're doing right now around the country. And we start actually with self-awareness, which is what you're really speaking to. And self-aware, we hope that there's a level that can come from within, right? We develop self-awareness. But to your point, people around us also provide us awareness of ourselves, right? That's our spouses, our children, the players we coach, our coaching peers. And so, but to do that, you have to humble yourself a little bit. You got to remove the ego. You got to break those walls down, which I think naturally coaches, you know, there's a lot of pride. There's a lot of competitive bravado. And so what, in your experience in working with leaders and coaches, how do you get coaches to break down those walls so that you can even get to the place of self-awareness?
Yeah, I think, man, that's definitely the million-dollar question, Sam. I mean, I just it is so, so challenging, again, for all of us, because especially the fact, like, when you win, you start winning, and even you get to a point where you win a state championship or a national championship, or, you know, again, more and more of those around you are telling you what you want to hear, and you start to believe that, hey, I've been right. And I think a lot of times in our society, guys, we really place way, way, way more weight on the success results than we really should in terms of, well, I won, so I must be doing something right. Well, okay. Listen, the reality is I've seen people win championships. I've seen people make tons of money and win, you know, the results in the business world, both of those cases, in many of the wrong ways. you know, and to your point, some of the most narcissistic or prideful or self-centered, or, I mean, you know, you name it. And all, you know, and then all of a sudden you get the result, you have this peak performance. And so you look back and go, well, you know, nobody's going to tell me how to do because this worked. And so there's a huge challenge there. And, you know, the saying, you probably heard this, people don't change until the pain is staying the same exceeds the pain of change. You know, pain is one way that some coaches kind of have the wake up call or the jolt to reality, jolt to their perspective. But I also think that, you know, that change can come from just an open heart, somebody around them, you know, somebody around you that genuinely loves you and cares about you that can help, really help speak that truth into your life in a way that opens your eyes to, you know, more than just hold on a second, I got the results, so I must be doing it everything perfectly. Well, again, like I said, there's a lot of different ways to win, and they're not all the right ways. There's a lot of different ways to make a ton of money. And just because you're at the top of your profession doesn't mean you won in all the right ways. And I think that's at the crux of so much of what's needed in society today, and both mentors and as we coach people and work with people, and even as coaches, is remembering that, like, hold on a second, you know, and just like, you know, not getting the results we want, losing some games, doesn't necessarily indicate that you're a bad leader either, you know, that you're a bad coach. And unfortunately, in the games that we play, you do have to figure out a way to win. You know, that I get that. So you can't, but we've got to make sure we put weight on the right things in the right ways and ultimately for the right reasons. And I think that's a key. So,
yeah, Todd, when we talk about the right way or the wrong way, and the right way, you know, being a double win, the right way being transformational, the right, if you had to make a case for it, you know, so many times I think there's a lot of coaches that we come in contact with that, like you said, well, I've won this way. I'm just going to stay this way. It doesn't matter. This is my job to win. If you had to make a case for doing it the right way, like the benefits of doing it the right way, because I think sometimes it's a sales job to coaches, like, why should I actually be different? You know, I'm just here to coach and get wins. And so I'd love to hear you talk about the benefits and make a case for doing it the right way.
Yeah. Well, I think, first of all, I mean, I think peace is, I've always told people, because you can pursue happiness for the, you know, over the course of your life. And what you're going to find when you get later in life, and I'm 53, so I've found that out many ways already, but this happiness thing is fleeting. You're just not going to be happy all the time. And because life has ups and downs and challenges that, you know, whether it's in our sport, our craft, or it's outside of that with our families or whatever, peace is something that you can have all the time. You know, joy is something that it's a choice that I think goes closely with, you know, runs parallel to peace. It's kind of ironic. And love is a big part of both of those things. And so when I believe that as a coach, when you are living out of the true reason, and again, like I said, I believe at the foundation of why we're here is relationships. Now, I'm a faith guy, so I'm going to always go back to that. God, man, God had, you know, he created us for relationships. He knows how we're wired. And without it, without genuine relationships, we're not going to find peace on this side of heaven, so to speak. So I think that's a, you know, coming to grips with, you know, this why you're here on this earth, and really just beginning to lead in a way that parallels that. So that when you lay your head on the pillow at night, you find peace in that, hey, man, I'm impacting these people, these young people in the right ways. We didn't just win, but we won because these people in 10 years from now, 15 years now, 20 years from now, I made a huge difference in their life. That's a big case, first and foremost. Now, the other part of that is I think you can win. I think it's harder to win in the transformational way versus all transactional. I really believe it's harder. But when you look at guys like Tony Bennett, and I'll say Scott Drew, and even on the football side of things, Dabo Sweeney, Jamie Chadwell, there's different coaches that I've worked with, and I spent a lot of time, and I've learned way more from them than I'm sure they've ever learned from me in being around their programs. But these guys truly are focused on more than just this season. You know what I mean? They want to win, make no mistake. But I've spent enough time with them to also see, even when they have tough stuff and they don't win and the results aren't exactly, you know, it's hard to explain if you haven't really been there. But there's a piece that these guys have that kind of surpasses all understanding. Now, you guys know what I'm talking about. And so it's hard to explain, but man, life is too short to not walk in such a way that you can have that peace every day, day in and day out, because you know you're doing it not only in the right ways, but for the right reasons. So, I mean, we could talk on that one for a long time, guys.
Well, I mean, one thing, I mean, it almost just gave me chills, because we had a part of our leadership clinic, and it's leading through adversity. And we show a clip, an interview of Tony Bennett. And it's an interview that happens the night before the national championship game. And they ask him, and they show clips of him just being so peaceful. And they ask him, how do you do that? Like, how does that happen? And his response, like, I could watch it 1,000 times. He said, I've already made peace with the outcome. And I mean, how many coaches can actually say that? And you can tell it in the way that he responds and the way that he reacts. Like and even when they lost the first 16 to lose to one, there was a certain level of peace and humility and response to that. That was just like, you know what? There's something different about this guy. And then the night before the national championship, to say that I just have this piece. And so Sam's got a follow-up question, but I just, when you started talking about that and you mentioned Tony Bennett, who we've had on the show before, like there's just something different that's so attractive about the way that he does mm-hmm. life and coaching.
Yeah, it's real for sure. I mean, that dude, he is. Yeah. Yeah.
And Todd, you know, just hearing you say what you just said, and, you know, TJ and I've talked about these things before on some previous shows, that's not widely accepted in the coaching world, meaning these two different worlds of I'm chasing transformational coaching. I'm trying to be a championship coach that puts rings on my fingers or hangs some banners. And I think they can both coexist, but the world wants Virginia fans want Tony Bennett to say in that interview that if he loses, he won't be able to sleep at night. And they want to see this disruption, and they want to see their coaches get angry, and that if they're at peace, they're not competitive. And I hate that those two things are pitted against each other when I don't think they are. I know you've spoken a little, but what's your thoughts on the relationship of those two things and how we can better frame it so coaches embrace it more?
Yeah. Man, that's such a tough one. I mean, I think, you know, to be successful as a coach, and I say, again, we know we have to win. Winning's just like money in the business world. It's like breathing, the saying of, you know, you got to breathe to live, but you don't live to breathe. You know, so winning is important, you know, being competitive, wanting to win. That's all such a key part of anybody's makeup that's going to go into coaching. So I don't think you don't want to throw it out. Definitely. You don't want to minimize the importance of being a competitor. But I think when you watch Tony, and again, like I said, there's other guys out there. There's not a ton. They're special. I mean, like I said, I mean, there's guys, some other guys, Bob Ritchie and Richie McKay, different guys that have been around. They're as competitive as anybody, and they still battle it too. Tony, all of them. I mean, they still battle that competitive nature day in and day out. But I think putting people around you, again, I'm going to go back to that self-awareness thing, putting people around you that can help recognize when you're out of balance, when you're out of bounds, when you're going down that path, because all of us can. When I wrote the book, guys, you know, people, everybody could relate to that coach. I had so many coaches around the country go, you wrote that about me. I mean, Urban Meyer was like, you wrote that about me. And Lane Kiffin was like, you know, I was like, no. I said, I wrote that about every, like 99% of anybody that's ever coached has battled that competitiveness. It's okay. But if you don't put people around you that help you keep that in check, I just don't believe. And again, like I said, I truly believe that's one of all of the guys that we've mentioned. I think that's one of the keys is having the person, people around you, or at least one person on your staff or one person that you're talking to, you know, consistently, that's going to really help call you out on those times when you get out of balance as a coach. I think that's absolutely critical to have that. And then you can, I mean, when you know that you have that, you know, I think, you know, again, in the case of like Dabo Swinney and different guys like that, I mean, they're gonna be intense and they're gonna be driven and they're gonna be, but in the back of their mind and in their hearts, they know, hey, I've done what I'm called to do in terms of also leaning on my brothers here to know that they're going to help me keep in check. And their faith is a big part of that. And all the guys that I've talked about, you know, there's definitely, you know, something much, much deeper that, you don't, you know, I guess ascribe to that same philosophy. You may not fully understand it, but there's definitely a depth there that, also helps keep that balance in check. But make no mistake, the one thing I would tell you, guys, a lot of times when we talk about the piece and we talk about like your example you gave with Tony, like some people are like, well, you know, you just got to be this soft-hearted, never get intense. And again, I give the example of like Dabo, man, that dude's intense. That dude is really intense. But keeps it in check, and it's for the right reasons. And even though he's cut from a completely different cloth, so to speak, as like Tony Bennett, like in personality wise, they both have the same foundational piece that leads them and helps them keep that balance with the competitive nature and, you know, the purpose, I should say, that they don't lose sight of either, that they're there really to make an impact in a much, much bigger way. So then those wins.
Yeah. And Todd, you know, you've said that word a couple times, which in prep for this, I listened to some old podcasts you've done and just trying to gain greater insight. You talked about in one of these, the difference in passion and purpose. And I really hadn't heard somebody distinguish it the way you had. And you may or may not remember, like, or maybe you talk on this all the time, but could you talk about that? How you see passion and purpose and how they're a little different?
Yeah, I'm really glad you asked that. Yeah, I do. I get really passionate about talking about it because I think that passion is awesome. It's, I mean, when people listen to, I mean, anybody that's around me knows I love it. I'm a passionate guy, very high energy. But I always caution people because I did this early on in my own life. I always caution people. It's an extremely dangerous thing. It's not the same as purpose. Passion is a strong affinity or love for something. Purpose is a reason for something's existence. Those are two different things. And oftentimes, because passion is something that we feel it evokes such a positive response nowadays, that a lot of people try to go, you know, try to say, oh, you know, find your passion, that's your purpose. And it's like, hold on a second. You know, we can be passionate about all kinds of things that quite frankly can get us in a lot of trouble if it's out of balance, you know, because it's centered in what we love the most. And sometimes we can love things and pursue things that aren't necessarily selflessly motivated. They're not more about others than, you know, than about us. So that can get us really into trouble. So what I always teach is like, you know, understand, you know, come to grips first and foremost with not only why you do what you do and getting honest with the answers to those questions, but why you're here on this earth. And those are ultimate, that's the ultimate purpose question. And once you recognize the true, healthy, why you do what you do and align that with the foundation of why you're here on this earth, that's first and foremost. Okay. Then it's time to get passionate about that. Because what happens is a lot of times we get passionate about all those things we love and we pursue those things at the expense of why we're really here on this earth. And make no mistakes, relationships is foundational to that. And I believe faith is a big part of that relationship component. But wherever you stand on that, relationships, I mean, science proves this out all the time. I mean, we're made for, we're social beings. We're made for each other, man. And so when we start pursuing things at the expense of the most important relationships, whether it's a spouse, whether it's our kids, whether it's the people we work with. And even, you know, as a coach, we got all these kids on this team, and it's just like, okay, does the superstar, is that the relationship that I care about the most? But I don't give a rip about that kid, that 10th kid or 12th kid or 13th kid, you know, or just, I mean, like, that's where we're losing sight of why we're really here on this earth. And so I get it. You're going to probably spend more time maybe with some of those high performers, and they got more potential and they want it more, whatever. I get that. But none of our passions should cause us, should we pursue those at, never at the expense of our ultimate purpose. And so that's the rub that I think happens a lot in the sports world. And, you know, I always help young people all the time. I'm speaking to teams and, you know, I'm going, because they're thinking, if you're a college athlete, especially, I mean, you're thinking, you know, if I play basketball, and that's my purpose. You know, that's my ultimate purpose in this life. And I'm like, that's not your ultimate purpose. That's a secondary component of your purpose. But what you get out of basketball and the relationships and how you are impacting your teammates and vice versa, how you are learning from your coaches and you're impacting them, they're impacting you, and the family component, all those, that's the bigger reason for, you know, that's the beauty of athletics. It's all the great and the amazing things that we gain from that experience in terms of adversity and commitment and loyalty and all the things that you know, we're trying to push a lot of those things out, believe me, some of the changes, especially in college sports in the last couple of years. But man, that's, you know, ultimately, that's why coming to grips with that purpose thing is so important at the beginning. And then, you know, building off of that with our passions.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah. Did that hit it?
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. That was awesome. Really powerful. And I deal with that on a regular basis as a college coach, like helping young people to unwrap their identity and not being in the sport and in the game, you know, because it's becoming more and more where who they are as a basketball player is who they are. And that identity, you know, finding identity in something besides their sport is I feel like it's a mission field in itself to help people, you know, live their best life and their purpose that was, you know, for them in their life. I'm curious, as we've talked a lot about developing leaders, we'll talk about the other side of it, the people that you're leading. And so let's just say you're leading the right way or you're leading the wrong way. I think it's helpful for coaches to be aware of, you know, leading the right way, the benefits of that, and also leading the wrong way, some of the things that can be really detrimental to the people you're leading, whether that's leading a team or whether that's leading a business. You know, can you talk a little bit to what it's like to be on the other side of good leadership and bad leadership?
Yeah, I mean, it's the easiest way for me to go down that path. And you guys might guess, I know it's been maybe a while since you read the book, but this whole thing of how we're really trying to motivate people with hatchets and treasures, you know, hatchets and treasures. And that is such the norm, again, in both the sports world and the business world. We tend to rely so much on the fears and the treasure. And again, I mean, those things work. They're quick. They're easy. If you've ever been a coach, you know how easy it is to go, all right, everybody on the line. I mean, you know, and we need that. So trust me, you know, we never want to take away from the discipline and the part of, hey, there is a healthy fear or hatchet, so to speak, that comes with being an athlete or being anywhere, and that we should fear maybe, or have a healthy fear of losing our jobs or not, you know, performing at our best or trying our hardest and those things. And the same, the treasure of the win or playing time or any of those things. But the reality is those things in and of themselves lead, I mean, they're short-term fixes and they they will never lead to the element of, or to the ultimate peace and, you know, the long-term benefits of the things that I call that would be lying within the heart, which is, you know, more the relationships, more the, you know, the really focusing on the impact. So I think, you know, the toughest thing for me right now, when I watch coaches and business leaders, I watch a lot of, there's a lot of success out there in, with folks that lead in that hatchet treasure way. But I would tell you that at some point that treasure, and again, whether it's in the business world or whether it's in the sports world, that treasure is never going to be enough. And so, the, you know, making $80,000 seems like a lot until you make it. As soon as you make $80,000, it isn't enough. You know, just like making 200 grand, it's not enough as soon as you're making 200 grand. You know, and that's the same way. Winning is the same way. You win in a championship and you all of a sudden think, man, you know, and if that's really what it's about, what's going to happen is, and I can't tell you how many coaches they experience this. Guys that have won multiple national championships, they'll tell you the first one, there's like, oh, this euphoria. And then all of a sudden the next day it was like, oh my gosh, is that all there is? Oh my gosh, we got to do it again. Because now nothing less. And so to your point or your question, TJ, when you talk about the dangers and the negative effect, when you rely on that, it will never be enough. And again, is it saying it's the athlete that says, I want to get a, you know, it's the high school athlete that says, I want to get a college scholarship. Well, guess what? You're going to get it. You know, if you get it, then oh, I wish I would have gone to this school. Man, I never knew this coach was going to push me like this. I never knew it was going to be this hard. I wish I could have done, you know, like it's never any of those things that we put out there as treasures. Typically, they're never going to be enough. And so if you're operating off of the fear of living up or fear of, you know, whatever it may be of not, you know, pleasing somebody, whatever it may be, and a treasure of, I got to achieve, you know, at some point, you will find yourself in misery because, again, like I said, it's never going to be enough. And, you know, in the case of you guys, Urban talks about, he's talked about this way back when, you know, when he won his first championship at Florida, and then the next one was like, you know, the day after, and then after the second championship, it was, you know, the day of, they're in the locker room and he's out texting, you know, I mean, it becomes this obsession. And I've seen way, 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 way more coaches that have won that where you see it really was about, I have to win that. And they really struggle mentally, emotionally, relationally, and oftentimes physically after that first championship, because that was what it was about. And the expectation, it'll never be enough until I get there. And you can see it if you watch closely in a lot of multinational championship winning coaches and in Power Five programs. I'm not going to mention names, but you guys are probably thinking some of, you can see it in their eyes in the championship, even in the interview after the game. Sometimes it's kind of like, yeah, well, this is great. I'm so proud of these kids. And in their mind, they're going, we did it again. Now we got to do it again. And it's like, man, there should be something so much more about that you know, the win is the residual, one of the residual effects, but not the ultimate. So sorry, that was probably a longer answer, guys, but man,
No. And it's kind of ironic. I mean, a couple thousand years before you wrote your book, it's talked about it in some other books like Ecclesiastes and, you know, some
meaningless,
like that.
Man. Yes, exactly.
Yes, 100%. But you did such a masterful job of putting that into terms that we as coaches can understand, because like you said, all of those coaches that responded that way to you, like you wrote this book about me, you know, I would say that it hits 95, 98% of coaches that have been in that place where they feel the same things that that coach and that businessman were feeling that you wrote about in the book. I imagine. Yeah. So no, I really appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah. And I would build on it too, Todd, TJ, you know, Kevin Durant, after he won the NBA championship, he even came out and said, it didn't fill my cup as much as I thought it would. Ironically, just last week, I got a text from a old coaching friend who did win a national championship at the college level. And basically this coach is now retired and they express regret and vulnerability because said after I won it, the pressure went up even more to fulfill that same, you know, achievement again. And then he would coach out of fear in the subsequent years. And I relate, like I had to do a self-check. I've got three kids. And a few years ago with my two boys, I thought I was parenting them too much out of fear. Mm. Fear that if I don't do a good job raising them, will they be strong enough young men to handle the world? And I started parenting out of fear. And I said, whoa, Sam, I had to check myself. But in the Urban Meyer, I don't know, Todd, if reading your book led me to the Urban Meyer. I know you did some interview marketing stuff with him, or whether I watched that and then read your book. I can't remember which came first, but he's a great story. You know, Coach K won two national championships at Duke and then had a bit of a downfall. But it's I'm saying a lot to say there's nothing wrong with chasing the championship.
That's right,
man. Go for it. Go give your best. But then to your point, be grounded in something stronger than the national champ or the championship or the win. And, you know, like you said, fear or achievement, but how do we ground ourselves? Well, it goes back to what you already said, purpose and identifying your bigger purpose. So I think I don't think I asked you a question. I think I need to get that off my chest. Do you have anything to say to that?
Yeah, no, you hit the nail on the head. And I mean, I don't think you can emphasize it enough because again, like I said, especially with coaches and the drive that is just inherent. I mean, you know, you're not going to be in coaching unless you want to win. You know what I mean? I get that. And, but that purpose, you have to flesh that out. You have to spend time on it. You have to think about it. You have to have people around you that can help, that are aligned with it and understand and can help keep you true to it. I mean, I can tell you guys, I mean, even for me, I'm a competitor driven and, you know, I tell people all the time, I think God gave me that book to write just because he knew that I needed the reminder constantly of the accountability of teaching the principles. And I just, ironically, guys, I just read it cover to cover again, just like a month ago for the second time in like 12 years, whatever, however many, you know, years it's been. And it hit me in some areas because I lose track too and get focused on, you know, hatchets and treasures too. And man, they can really take a toll on your health. And to your point, Sam, on your family, you know, some of the most important relationships in life. You know, if you achieve everything you want to achieve in this world and become great in the eyes of everyone else, but your family, I don't think you've been a success. And I know you have not been the best that you were truly created to be. And that's something that we cannot lose sight of, and especially in the world of sports when we're, you know, it's by nature, so many folks are so ultra driven. And I mean, I get stories and stories of every sport of national championship winning coaches that I've worked with. And in a number of cases, you guys, multi-championship winning coaches that battled sleeping, depression, you know, substance abuse, other substance abuse things after winning one or two national championships because of that pressure that just, I got to live up now. And man, the one bit of advice that I give to any, especially the young coaches, is come to grips with that purpose thing right now. Because I know it's just like everybody. I mean, it's the age old, when we look at all the people that are multi-millionaires and we go, oh, you know, well, they can't handle it, but let me try it and I'll show you I can handle it. You know, it's like all these national championships. Well, give me a national championship. I'll handle it better. Well, the reality is we're all, you know, susceptible to that type of thinking. So
Todd, sorry to interject. Yeah. So let me play devil's advocate for a second. So you have the coach who, you know, they're here, they hear you speak or you come in or they listen to this and they called you on the phone. They say, Todd, hey, I'm just want to win. I'm a competitive coach. And, you know, I don't really know my purpose. My purpose is to win. My purpose is to teach kids how to win. And I think that's going to help them in life. Like, how do you help the coach who says, I don't either agree or I don't know my purpose?
Well, first thing I say is you're wrong. No, I'm just kidding. I get that. And I think, you know, that's a great actual question, Sam, because I think, there's a lot out there. I mean, you can, it's like I said a little while ago, you can win, with hatchets and treasures. There's a lot that really do. The biggest thing I'll tell you is, again, I'm going to go back to what we were talking about all the way at the beginning, you guys, when we talk about how important is peace of mind. How important is it to lay your head on a pillow at night? Because, you know, I'm just going to tell you that I've worked with so many coaches that have won multiple times and have achieved that. And it's, again, like I said, it's over and over and over. If you want to live in that obsession and you want to live in that angst and you want to risk the most important relationships around you, you know, more often than not, whether it's a spouse, whether it's kids, whether it's the people that you're working with, you know, I want the people I'm working with. I don't want people, if I'm a coach, I don't want 10 years down the road, one of my assistant coaches to sit in a room and basically say to another group of guys, you know, I worked for that guy 10 years ago. And he's one of the worst human beings I've ever worked for. And if you're okay with that, I don't know what to say to, I feel bad for you because I don't think at some point in your life, I think it's going to catch up with you. But I can tell you that I've had that experience. I've heard coaches say that about people they've worked for, and some of those over the top obsessive, they won, but it was miserable and they were burning bridges all the way around it because it was only about that win. And they can look back and go, well, I made you a lot of money and I did, you know, but it's still not, you know, it's still not right. So
I think about this, you know, sometimes certain quotes stick with you forever. And one that sticks with me, I tweeted yesterday, is Andy Stanley says, you know, it's most likely that your greatest contribution to this world will not be something you do, but somebody you raise. And as coaches, that's what we do. I mean, we're in the business of helping raise young men and young women. And, you know, it helps me remember my purpose. You know, often I just think about that where you can win championships, and I have won national championships and it is a hollow feeling. I think those of us that have done it long enough and have planted enough seeds, eventually you get to reap some of that harvest and you get to go to weddings and you get to see your players have babies and you get to experience some of those things. And you really feel the richness of those things where there is no hollowness to that. Like, it just feels good. And, you know, so gosh, man, I can't just thank you enough for writing the book and the profound impact it has had on so many people. And the other thing is the testament of time. Like, this book was written, what, 13, 14 years ago? And it continues to be a topic of conversation. People are reading this on the regular. And that's amazing that a book withstood the test of time like yours has. So kudos to you on that. It's just really impressive. I want to let our listeners just tell us, where can they find it? Where can they find out more about you? Where can they continue to follow? Like, give our listeners, because I know that they're going to be in touch and impacted by this and they don't want it to end there.
Yeah. well, you know, as much as I actually, a big part of what I talk about in leadership these days is the construction of the heart. And then I go into the dangers of social media and all that other stuff. The reality is there's a lot of good that can come from social media too. So you can find me on most of the platforms just at my name, Todd Gonwer, you know, or at Todd Gonwer on Twitter and same with Instagram, not as active on there, but Facebook. And there's a Lead for God's Sake Facebook page. So all of those normal places. I have a website where, you know, kind of my coaching and leadership and cultural development stuff. The name of my company is Cardia Transformation Group. So it's Cardia with a K, Cardiatg.com. And so you can find me there. And again, I'm pretty easy to find out there, obviously. The book's out there available in most, I think it's still in most stores. I mean, I don't know. Like I said, it's been a while, but usually it's, you can get in Barnes & Noble or Amazon and those places. So.
Well, Todd, we really appreciate you coming on, man. We've admired you from afar. So to get a chance to have a conversation with you, and like TJ said, you've impacted us, and you've impacted, as you know, hundreds, maybe thousands of coaches all over the world. And coaches that are listening, leaders that are listening, one way you can support us, or what else, will support our guests like Todd. So go out there, buy the book, follow him. It'll impact your life in a really positive way, like it has TJ and I. So he is TJ, he is Todd, I am Sam, and we are the Hardwood Hustle.
Thanks again for tuning into this episode of the Hardwood Hustle, where we believe in the value of a coach. If you're interested in one of our coaching clinics, diving into one of our coaching tracks, or simply joining our PGC coaching community, go to pgccoaching.com to find the support you've been looking for in all aspects of your coaching. From the Hardwood Hustle team, thanks again. We can't wait to be with you again next week.